The word Democracy Now! To the number 66866. Democracy Now! One word to 66866. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Noreen Shea, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up next is Positively Revolting.
Coming this June to the Monday Sampler.
Space Patrol!
Starting June 11th and continuing right through summer.
High adventure in the wild, vast reaches of space. Missions of daring in the name of interplanetary justice. Travel into the future with Buzz Corey, Commander-in-Chief of the Space Patrol.
Yes, the late-night radio show that comes on in the afternoon. The Monday Sampler will present Space Patrol.
Abby, can you hear me? Pull away from it.
I'm trying to, sir, but the rockets don't seem to have any effect.
Use full power on your starboard rocket.
I am, sir, but we're caught in some sort of a whirlpool.
Have hit full repeller ray. If you're caught in there, you're finished.
Tune in June 11th for our first exciting adventure.
Space Patrol story, The Hole in Empty Space.
And if you missed the broadcast, you can always go to kboo.fm to the audio archive. That's all right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring an archive contractor for 40 hours a week for $20 an hour. This is a contract position that will last from July through December of 2018. The archive contractor will steward the KBOO archival assets in all forms. They will work with historical KBOO content in many audio formats, as well as the Resource Space Archival Database, documents of KBOO history, and KBOO staff and volunteers. Please send in a resume, cover letter, and answer the question, why is KBOO important? To Dell at kboo.org. That's DEL at kboo.org. More information about responsibilities and position requirements can be found at kboo.fm.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
And good morning. The time is about 2 minutes after 8 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, KBOO Portland. This is Positively Revolting, and I'm your host, Ani Haynes. This morning, we are going to be speaking with Topeka K. Sam. She's joining me by phone. Topeka is the director for the campaign Dignity for Incarcerated Women, as well as the founder and executive director of the Ladies of Hope Ministries, whose mission is to help disenfranchised and marginalized women and girls transition back into society through spiritual empowerment, education, entrepreneurship, and advocacy. She's also the founder of Hope House, New York City, a safe housing space for women and girls. And she serves on the board of directors for Grassroots Leadership and Operation Restoration. There are so many more things I can say about Topeka, but I want to just go to her right now. Good morning, Topeka. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. And let's just jump right into this topic. It is such a huge topic, and let's just sort of maybe give the broadest picture first. The U.S. is number one in incarcerations. We have more than 2 million people incarcerated at this time, and so many more who are under supervision and involved with the Department of Corrections and Department of Justice, making mass incarceration a huge social problem and crisis, both in civil and in human rights. The system shows its racist foundations when we look at the vastly disproportionate number of Black and Native American people who are currently or have been incarcerated. Over 3,200 people are serving life sentences without parole. And more than 17,000 people are living de facto life sentences, sentences that are so long as to be construed as it might as well be a life sentence, right? In federal prisons alone, over 1,500 people are serving life without parole for nonviolent drug convictions. And about 65% of those people who are serving are Black. And in life sentences, about half of all of the prisoners who are serving life sentences are Black. Topeka, can you talk a little bit more about the scope of this problem of mass incarceration? How is it impacting communities? How is it devastating, especially the Black community?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think you gave a great broad stroke over what's actually happening. You know, if you want to talk about what's going on specifically and speaking more about the numbers, presently there's 4.7 million people under surveillance. When I say surveillance, meaning through pretrial probation or federal supervision, which is also another form of incarceration. And so we have to look at that and then how families and communities are then over-policed because of supervision and surveillance. And then you think about the 70 million people in this country that have criminal convictions, period. And that's one in three adults.
Right.
So with those numbers, I mean, if you turn to your left or you turn to your right, there's definitely another person who's been impacted by incarceration, and then over 100 million children who have been impacted. So this is, you know, deathly killing our communities, and specific criminalizing communities of color.
Absolutely. And when we are looking at rates of incarceration, one thing that is really not talked about nearly enough and is a big focus for you, so I'm very excited to have the opportunity to have you on this morning, that's the incarceration of women and girls, right? We have, in fact, gone up about 700% in the rates of incarceration for women and girls over the last 30 plus years. Can you talk about how that has come into being? What has been the rush to incarcerate women and girls? What's causing that huge increase?
I mean, well, I think, you know, just thinking about criminalizing our community, and, you know, after locking up all the men, you know, then who's left are the women? The women are the primary caregivers. The women are the ones who are actually supporting the men. And when I say women, it could be a mother, a grandmother, a sister, an auntie, a daughter, a girlfriend, a wife, a friend, right? And in order to break the unit, the family unit, what happens is that then women are arrested too, either as part of conspiracy charges of the convictions of some of the men, as being criminalized for substance misuse and or poverty. You know, there are crimes of poverty. People don't have access to resources, to opportunity, and so there are crimes of survival. And women are getting criminalized for that. And so, you know, it's again, just dismantling our communities, locking people up, putting them in prison, and then you have the warehousing people, and then what do you do? You know, what do we do? You know, we find ourselves in prison, we don't have those resources and access and opportunities, and then people come home, back under surveillance, back into the same system, back into the same communities, with the lack of resources, without safe housing, and then end up going through this cycle of abuse.
Yeah, it has really been eye-opening as I've looked into what is causing, you know, what are some of the sentences, what are some of the charges, I guess is what I should say, that women have been put away for life. Because of different states and their three strikes rules, you know, shoplifting and passing a bad check. I mean, crimes of poverty, crimes of trying to survive and feed your family in a system that is already stacked against you, as a poor woman, as a woman of color, that you know, basically trying to make sure your kids have food and that you have a place to live may. You know, you may make some choices that will end you up, that have a strong potential of ending you up in prison for long sentences and or for life for nonviolent crimes.
I mean, then you also have to add to that, you know, the fact that there is, you know, a large number of women who are incarcerated because of being in abusive relationships, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So being, the 86% of women are survived, who are in prison are survivors of some type of sexual violence of abuse or abuse. And these are just the reported numbers, right?
Right.
So when you think about all the women who are incarcerated because of that and think about those type of relationships and the stresses that those relationships are under, you know, you have women who are then, again, you know, kidnapped off the street as part of these conspiracy charges. And because of, you know, just either not having enough information to provide, wanting to believe in the justice system and that they didn't do anything, they go to trial. And then what happens is they get hit with things that they didn't even know about and end up with life sentences. You know, a lot of times you're criminalized for self-defense. You know, sisters mm-hmm. that I've met, they've been abused for years, reported abuse. And, you know, when it gets to a point where, for example, a sister that I know walked in after she was being abused, both physically, sexually, by her husband, reporting these abuses, he kept coming back, and then she walked in on her husband raping her daughter. And so the natural response to that, you know, what would anyone do?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, at some point, it's like enough is enough, and then she gets sentenced to life in prison.
Right.
You know, but having crying out for help for her and her family. And so it's many, many different things that women are criminalized for. And, you know, the work that many of us are doing around this country is to bring more light to that and also to change these systems to provide access and resources and opportunities when they come home to the front end, you know, do alternatives to incarceration, diverting women so they don't have to go to prison and lose their children and dismantle their children.
Right. And to that end, you have started the group. You're the founder and executive director of the Ladies of Hope Ministries. Can you talk a little bit about your group?
Sure. So Ladies of Hope Ministries, you said what the organization is about. And we focus on connecting women with resources so that they can transform and thrive in their lives. And a part of that is Hope House, which is a safe housing space. So we all know that no matter who you are and where you are, that safe housing is the number one necessity for anyone to be able to just live and transform, period. You know, when you go to college, you believe that being on a college campus is a safe space. When you move off the campus and want to have your own space so that you're able to finish school, right? Get your education, be able to raise your family. And the problem is that people come home from prison and they don't have those. And women specifically, you know, usually, again, women being the primary caregivers, when you come in, you lose everything. So when you come out, there's no one there or nothing to help you with. And so, you know, for me, it was God gave me the vision to do a house for women coming home with my co-founder, Renee Sykes, when we were both in federal prison. Because when we came home, we knew that we would have safe housing because she had her home to go back to, I had my family to go back to, and that our transitions would be much different. And so through the help of another formerly incarcerated woman, Susan Burton, we were able to start Hope House. And now we are completely full. It's in the Bronx, and we're looking to scale it in New York and then have a house in every state in the country.
That is fantastic work. Would you mind sharing a little bit more about your story? I think so many times people who have not been incarcerated or have not had a close family member incarcerated don't understand how this can happen to people who are, you know, not stereotypical, like what they see in big movies. Like, you know, how did you end up as an incarcerated woman?
Well, I ended up as an incarcerated woman as a young, actually, I ended up incarcerated in my late 30s. However, I grew up in Manorville in Long Island. My parents, who were still together after 50 years, were franchise business owners. We were the only black family in our neighborhood. So once I got to college and I wanted to go to an HBCU because I wanted to be in the community and be around other people of color, I started veering off of campus and end up getting caught up in what was different than what it was that I was used to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as it related to that and just my own identity issues, my own need to be, accepted or what I thought was being accepted at the time, that I started dating different types of men, getting exposed to a different lifestyle, and eventually that landed me in federal prison with a conspiracy drug charge. Now, when I went in, I was also division chairperson for Amtrak Onboard Service Workers Union. I did have my own business, and I wanted to start another business. And so my experience and my reasons for going in were, you know, are slightly different. And my and when I went in, also the resources that I had great support. I had my parents, my brothers, my friends. I had mentors who came in and visited me. Because I had a certain skill set, I was able to work in certain jobs inside, which afforded me, instead of getting $5 a month like most people were, I had a job that allotted $100 a month plus family support. So, you know, my experience pales in comparison to the thousands of women, millions of women who are incarcerated right now across this country who have been victims of different things in their life. You know, but it is important, and I do speak about my experience because there are many women who I know who I went to college with. There are many women who I know had the upbringing experiences. So, you know, incarceration affects everyone.
Yeah.
There is no stereotype. I know that, you know, television likes to portray it to be one way, but there were more women that I met like me and who had experienced life in the way that I did when I was in federal prison, actually, than there were not.
Yeah. And I think that that is such a hugely important thing to really get across to listeners, that that stereotype is exactly that. It's a stereotype. It's hollow. And that incarceration actually affects everyone. And actually, you know, as a societal problem, the cost of incarceration, not only, you know, to the communities that are most impacted, but as a whole, as a social program, this is something that really has to end. And to that end, you are also involved in a campaign for massive prison reform. Can you talk about the director of can you talk about the campaign Dignity for Incarcerated Women?
Fantastic, absolutely. So the Dignity for Incarcerated Women Act started as a federal legislation that was written by and for incarcerated women as a part of the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls, at which point Senator Booker had sponsored the bill, Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren. And Cut 50 was also working with Senator Booker in order to bring light and also push the legislation on a federal level in hopes that other states would pick it up. So I came on as the director of the Dignity Campaign for Incarcerated Women to help to push that legislation federally, but also connect other women locally to resources who wanted to do the legislation in their state and connect them through Cut 50 with other state legislators that would help to push and co-sign and co-author this legislation. And so far, we've been able to push the legislation and pass Dignity for Incarcerated Women in Kentucky, in Louisiana, in Connecticut, and it's being introduced in California. It will be in Florida and Georgia. It's passed in Maryland. And the idea is to have 20 pieces of legislation passed by 2020. And so the Dignity for Incarcerated Women Act looks at the conditions of confinement for women who are incarcerated. And so that's to make sure that women have access to hygiene products like tampons and pads at no cost, that you end the shackling of women while they're pregnant and incarcerated in solitary confinement for women just because they're pregnant, that, you know, men guards are no longer into the spaces where women are, and that proximity to children will be less than 500 miles driving miles, so that women have an opportunity to continue to unify the bonds with their children. Also allowing formerly incarcerated women and mentors to go back in the prison to do programming, because we do know that those of us who experience firsthand are the ones that actually know what to do in order to solve any problem. And so excited about this legislation and just moving it across the country and making sure that women at least have their basic needs met while incarcerated.
And I want to go ahead and let our listeners have a chance to call in with their questions and their comments. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. You are listening to KABU, your community radio station. I'm Ani. This is Positively Revolting. And today I am speaking with Topeka Sam. She is the director of the Dignity for Incarcerated Women campaign, as well as the founder of, sorry, I so have the frog in my throat this morning, as well as the founder and executive director of Ladies of Hope Ministries. And thank you for taking the time to talk with us this morning, Topeka. Again, that number is 503-231-8187. For people, you know, we go out on the internets to everywhere, but here we are situated in the corner of Northwest Oregon, Southwest Washington as our terrestrial radio signal. Do you know of any specific campaigns that are happening in Oregon or Washington?
In Oregon and Washington State?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there are definitely campaigns and organizations that are working all over this country as it relates to, I focus on women's issues and incarceration. Mm-hmm. So like in Washington State and Seattle, they have Civil Survival, which is an organization that actually focuses on giving opportunity and resources and also skills, leadership skills and training for formerly incarcerated people. And that's led by Tara Simmons, who's also a formerly incarcerated woman and who's done amazing work out there with an attorney. And also there's What's Next Washington, who's led by Susan Mason. I mean, there's so many things that people reach out. I can definitely give them some information. You know, those are just the ones that are coming to the top of my head right now.
Mm-hmm. Great. And, you know, this is something that is going to take everyone working on. And so, you know, getting people to actually see what's happening in the criminal justice system as a basic human rights issue, especially in regards to women. I remember the ACLU's report from 20 years ago highlighting the shackling of women in labor. You know, and you just ran through several of the hardships that women are facing, especially within the system. If we could go back and just detail a little bit more about, you know, how women are treated within the prison system. We don't talk about this nearly enough. And I really want to make sure that people understand the gravity of the issues.
So right now, well, let me see. As far as shackling of women while they're pregnant, there were 33 states that were still doing it in this country. And I just named three that where the legislation was passed mm-hmm. to remove it. So it's about 30 now. And when you think about how barbaric and inhumane that is, you know...
And that is still more than half the states in this union, right? So still absolutely. More than half.
Right, and then even for those that have passed legislation, there are reports that it's still happening, right? Because there's no accountability measures and things, and people are not being held accountable for when they are doing it. And sometimes, unfortunately, when you go in, you know, you're not educated of what all the laws are, and you just listen to what people tell you, right?
Right.
And so, you know, you're being victimized and traumatized while on many different levels. But then we have, again, women who are in the most intimate of positions and vulnerable of positions being criminalized while pregnant. And, you know, there's a sister who talked great about her experience, Pamela Wynn out of Georgia, who when she was arrested and held, she was detained. She hadn't even been sentenced at this time, yet was shackled while she was pregnant and ended up losing her baby because they put her in solitary confinement and just left her there. And so it's these experiences, and you know, we have to think, just because a person is in prison and whether or not they've been convicted of a crime or not, does not mean that it gives anyone the okay to treat them like an animal, right?
Absolutely.
And so I have to think about what we're doing to people. How can that not only, you know, like hurt a woman and but hurt the baby? You know, mm-hmm. In Texas recently there was a you know baby because of it.
I'm sorry, there is a little interference on the line. Can you go back and repeat that last sentence? In Texas, what happened?
Yeah, in Texas recently, there were two reports. One woman who was telling the officers that she thought she was going through labor, and they didn't believe her, and so they wouldn't take her to the doctor, and she ended up having the baby in the cell.
Oh, my.
You know, right there. And then another one who lost her baby a few days afterwards because they wouldn't take care of her and give her the proper health care needs that she needed. And this was in Texas, in Houston, I believe. And within the last 30 days.
Mm.
And so there are things that are happening all over this country. And, you know, no one deserves to be treated in a way because they either, A, you know, did something that may not have been acceptable to others and is against the law. you know, and punishment doesn't mean that it is punitive. You know, the idea of putting a person in prison is, yes, to hold them accountable for, you know, the mistake that they made, but it's not to treat them like an animal or some or someone that's, you know. It just makes me so upset, you know.
Yeah. Well, it is outrageous that this is, you know, how a segment of the population feels like it is totally fine to treat incarcerated people as animals and to deny them basic dignity and basic civility and basic human rights. This is an absolutely outrageous situation. It has been going on, you know, since really the beginning of our country, you know, and now we, I think, are able to connect in ways where we might actually be able to see some substantive reforms through campaigns like the campaigns that you are directly involved with and the services that you are bringing forth and providing. I really am hoping that this is the case. We have Frances on the line to join us this morning. Good morning, Frances. You are on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I appreciate all the work that you're doing, Topeka. I have, over the years, after when I was very young, my husband was railroaded to prison, so I've done a lot of work in the community in various venues, doing work to help families. I don't think people realize how incarceration affects so many people other than the person sitting in jail,
right,
and mm-hmm. the children and the family members. And over these years, I remember having a conversation with Warden Hoyt Cupp years ago when he was the warden of Oregon State Penitentiary. It used to be called the Big House. And he acknowledged to me that probably 90% of the people in his prison really didn't need to be there. And I've lately been hearing about people who are actually stepping out of the box and the whole notion of incarceration, the putting people in cells, in cages, is so barbaric, and it's so and we accept it as a norm.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you've heard any more. I would love to hear more about people who are actually advocating to find alternatives to incarceration, to
all
where
right.
that isn't even a consideration. And I hope that one day we can get there, because this, just the notion, just, you know, aside from how people are treated, just the fact that people are put in cages,
yeah,
is kind of absurd.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that we can somewhere, someday, get outside that box and do something different. But I appreciate all the work that you guys are doing.
Thank you so much for your call this morning,
yeah.
Frances. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Frances.
Yeah, Topeka, did you want to comment on Frances's comments?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, you know, even if I can speak just from my own experience.
Please.
You know, as much as we think that those of us who are impacted by incarceration, that the rest of the world understands what's going on, that before I was incarcerated myself, even when I visited people who was incarcerated, I didn't understand the impact that it really had on people and on families and on communities until I actually experienced it firsthand myself.
Yeah.
And when I say firsthand, meaning inside, because even outside, you know, you go visit your family member, you send money, you know, you take the phone calls, you're supporting them, and it becomes a stress, but it also becomes a part of your daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you live within it, you know, you know that it's not right, but it's also something that you have to do in order to keep your family unified.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, there are many people around the country and even around the world who are working on prison abolition, who are working on alternatives to incarceration, who are working on decarceration, who are working on reentry. You know, it's best to look at the people who have been impacted most,
mm-hmm.
Instead of looking for, you know, some of these even politicians. And we have to be honest. Like, you know, we have to look at who we are actually voting into office. And who do we want to get behind to have an office? And that as much as we think that, you know, our votes don't matter, they do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to educate people who have been impacted by the system to vote and what their voting rights are. right? And that if your family member cannot vote because they're incarcerated, then you vote for them,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, it's all of these things that we need to do. But, you know, for me, when I first came home, I was connected to someone who was doing the work. But also, you know, your loved one who's incarcerated, they know the people who came home who are doing work. You know, there are organizations that you can Google locally. And if you don't find what you're looking for, then start your own.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did.
Can you talk a little bit about the work of the Cut 50 campaign?
Sure. So Cut 50 broadly just looks at how do we population in half and also bringing bipartisanship both sides to the table in order to pass legislation that's going to help with prison reform, sentencing reform. And so Van Jones and Jessica Jackson Sloan are leading it. It's a great team over there with Alex Gudish, Sandia, Olivia, everyone. And so, you know, they're an amazing team, a small team that is just pushing every day on the ground legislation and actually working with those of us impacted to make sure that things are moving in a way that will bring justice to the people and actually get them out.
I want to again remind folks you can call in and join in this conversation, and that is at 503-231-8187. Go ahead, give us a call. You can also follow along throughout the week. Positively Revolting is there on Facebook. You can like our page on Facebook where you can find us, Positively Revolting, or in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. I'm Ani. I'm speaking with Topeka Sam this morning, and we are taking your calls at 503-231-8187. Let's go ahead and talk to Edie. Good morning, Edie. You're on the air.
Good morning. One of the a Boston Black lawyer and realtor, Andrea James, did what you could to stop families, Black families, from being made homeless through illegal and unfair foreclosure and evictions, then went to prison herself. And as a result of that, getting out of prison, she formed Families for Justice as Healing. It's predominantly about Black mothers in prison for nonviolent crimes. And they have a lot of initiatives and organizations, call outs, and programs that I'd suggest that the listeners also check out. It's Families for Justice and Healing. Not only are Black men being locked up and Black mothers being locked out, but now locked up more and more. And for whites who think this is never going to happen to them, it's establishing a system, a logic, an insensitivity or justification, and an economy that's based on incarcerating more and more people with false explanations and for prison slave labor. It's not just happening to Native Americans in the worst proportions and then to Blacks next worst. It's happening to political activists, to Muslims, to Hispanics, and to Native Americans who've been traveling back and forth across the Rio Grande long before Christopher Columbus came here. So I look up Families for Justice and Healing, and there's lots of things that we can do here and now.
Thank you, Edie, for your information, as always.
Yes, thank you, Edie. It's FJ, Families for Justice as Healing. And the website is justiceishealing.org. Andrea James is an amazing woman. But yes, she's in Boston. That's her local organization. But she's also the executive director of the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. That's the organization I had mentioned earlier mm-hmm. that does the legislation or started the legislation around Dignity for Incarcerated Women Act. So she's definitely a force to be reckoned with, and an organization that people can look out. And not only is she doing things on the local level, but again, through the National Council, has worked with several women to pass legislation, like the primary caretaker legislation that she did up in Massachusetts, that's being picked up in other states around the country.
And let's, again, talking about the particular support, well, the particular situation of Black women in prison and incarcerated, and the disruption to the community and to the family and to the children and et cetera. Last month, we spoke with a local activist who was involved in a local campaign for Black Mama's Bailout Day. And that that is a campaign that was looking to actually crowdsource money, pool money together to actually provide bail for Black women so that they could spend time awaiting sentencing with their families. Can you talk about campaigns like that and how you see that fitting into the bigger picture of incarceration and prison reform?
No, absolutely. So there are many, many, many ways to dismantle this beast, right? You definitely need bail reform, but you need no bail, right? Period. You know, people need to be able to be home and fight their cases. Actually, even if you take a step before then, people don't even need to be fighting cases because you have to look at why we're criminalizing people,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Black Mama's Bailout is an important initiative, and the women across the country have been doing amazing work around that. I want people to understand that whatever you feel needs to happen within the system, that it's important that you take on that piece of the system, right? That there's no one-size-fits-all way to mm-hmm. end this beast. It's such a huge problem. And no matter what we do, my hands, I would say, are in a lot of different pots, because though I believe that we must decarcerate and we must end incarceration of women and girls, that when we in the criminalization, we got to stop women from going in. And so, legislation like primary caretakers and different things that are being done around the country is important. We also have to stop poverty, right?
Right.
And how do we stop poverty? Because poverty is why people are being criminalized. So we have to make sure that we're reinvesting in our own communities. We have to stop thinking that we have to leave our communities and go to other communities and people just coming in and gentrifying them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we reinvest in our people and our schools and our communities? Once people are trapped in this system, how do we continue to make sure that they have access to resources and opportunity when they come home? Invite people back into your community or their community. When I opened up Hope House, I had so many problems because people were like, not in my backyard.
Mm.
And this is a community of color in the Bronx. And in the Bronx, most people are released coming home from prison, right? It's in the
right.
same district that Rikers Island is. But people are like, we don't want you here. And gave us, hell. Just because we're like, wait a minute. Formerly incarcerated people deserve to have safe housing and live anywhere. You didn't even give us a chance. Just because you knew that we've been impacted by the system, you don't want us here. But the numbers show that it's got to be at least one person in each house on this block that has been impacted,
mm-hmm.
right? So, we have to think also about the internalized racism and the things that happen within our communities
mm-hmm.
and how we do a lot of us and them, and also start from within, that this impacts our community. Right. And so whether or not I have been incarcerated or a direct family member of mine has been incarcerated, as long as one of my people have been incarcerated, then that makes me incarcerated too. And so whatever I can do to help that, whether I can be a mentor, whether I can provide prayer, if I can send $10 or $20 into a person incarcerated, when a person comes home, go join a ministry, or if you're not a person who's a person who believes in any type of faith or religion, yoga, take someone to the gym, teach health and wellness,
mm-hmm.
how do you have a healthy lifestyle? Like all of these parts, help to build people. And once you build people, you can equip them to advocate for their self and their community.
I want to once again give out that phone number so that people can join in this important conversation this morning. 503-231-8187. We are talking with Topeka Sam about the huge problem of mass incarceration, especially how it's impacting women and girls, especially in the Black community, and her work with the Dignity for Incarcerated Women campaign, as well as the Hope House, and so much more. You do so much, Topeka. I'm so glad that we're able to connect this morning. And again, that number to call in, 503-231-8187. Don't wait till the last moment. We have about 15 minutes left to speak with Topeka, just a scooch more than that. So you want to call in now, 503-231-8187. And, you know, your plea to get involved in a way that speaks to you, because this problem is such a multi-headed beast, right? And it is truly devastating in our country. So, again, getting involved, whether that's with direct prisoner support, with prison, with policy reform, with prison abolition, with restorative justice campaigns, all of those things are important. Yeah,
that's right. Each and every one of them.
So I can't help but just, there's a story this week that has just kind of blown me away, and that's the story of Alice Johnson, who was incarcerated for over 20 years. For a first-time nonviolent offense, a conspiracy for drug trafficking. And she was released this week through circumstances that just kind of blow my mind. You know, there's been campaigning for her case for a long time, and yet she was granted clemency by Trump because Kim Kardashian went and pled her case. And the idea of Celebrity Apprentice actually having a positive impact on the world is just, to me at this moment, a little bit mind-blowing. But I think that her case and her story is really compelling in that here's a woman who really never needed to do time, who was kept away from her family for over 20 years to be released this week by whatever means, you know, that just seemed bizarre to me, but I'm so glad that she has been released. Can you comment on her case?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm going to start with your comment about the Celebrity Apprentice really being able to, you know, celebrity being able to bring a person home.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we have to also remember that Celebrity Apprentice is the person who is running the country, right?
Yeah, right.
And so we have to just look at the dynamics of how things move and change, but and that the President of the United States, when it comes to a person who's in federal prison and is serving life, the President of the United States is the only person that can grant clemency or pardon to a person who's serving life in federal prison. That's the only person who can set them free.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either you go to President Trump because he's the president right now, or you wait until whoever the next president is who you think is going to help. And so with Miss Alice, I found out about who Miss Alice was 3 years ago through Amy Hova, who has Can Do Clemency Foundation. And Amy received clemency from President Bill Clinton 20 years ago. And from the time she was released, she's been advocating first women, but now women and men, to receive clemency for all nonviolent drug offenders. That's what Can Do stands for, clemency for all nonviolent drug offenders. And so Miss Alice, Amy introduced me to her, and, you know, we have been working together closely and built a strong relationship, putting her on symposium as Real Women, Real Voices through the National Council all over the country. And there was an opportunity when someone saw her video with Google at a Google event that Cut 50 partnered with Google in to have her on mic. And so we facilitated that. The video went out. Someone saw it. That someone ended up being Kim Kardashian. And she reached out to her legal team, and those who saw the CNN piece last night with Van Jones, she spoke about how she felt that she was moved. You know, it hit her spirit. Yeah. And she asked it. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I hope that more people act on what they feel in their spirit.
Absolutely.
It, you know, in the end, I'm a believer of it was not Kim Kardashian. It wasn't Donald Trump. It was God,
mm-hmm.
right? And it was so much work. The work of Amy, the work of Brittany Barnett, the work of Jennifer Turner, the work of Nkechi Saifa, the work of Andrea James, the work of Sarita Sidebarton, the work of many people, Miss Alice, Tertessa, Tina Marie, her daughters, her family, prayers,
mm-hmm.
you know, that have happened over the last 20 years that led to this moment, right? And, you know, as a believer myself, you know, I just believe that, you know, God is letting us know, because many people thought that Trump would never do something like this ever,
mm-hmm.
right? That he would only pardon his friends, you know, people that
yeah.
he knew. And we saw that to be different. He said that, you know, drug dealers should get the death penalty.
Yeah.
Right? And yet Miss Alice is free.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's just what that signifies to me is that you trust in God and not in man. And Miss Alice is a believer. And so because of that, you know, I just believe that God works in her favor. I also believe that, you know, because if we just have to look at things in the flesh, that the world has come to social media and marketing, right? Mm-hmm. That's how people get their messaging out. People, that's how you organize.
Yeah.
That's just what it is today. Not that people aren't going block by block, door to door, because that's very important when it comes to community-based organizations and community organizing. But when you want to get mass messaging out, you do it on social media now.
Yeah.
That's just the way that the world has come to. And so being able to utilize a platform and get her out, it worked.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the idea now is the work doesn't stop,
right?
Who else will step up and say that they want to partner with a formerly incarcerated person or an incarcerated person and bring them home? Who else will say that I'm going to take a risk because my spirit feels this way? You know, and hopefully, you know, President Trump will continue to grant clemency for more people and change legislation, not only in prison reform, but sentencing reform. And hopefully, you know, we'll really, really use this as an opportunity to change the system, since that's what they have committed to in the White House. So we'll see.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, however it worked, when I first heard that Kim Kardashian was actually going to be meeting with Trump over prisoner reform, I remember just sort of shaking my head and going, we are living in the most surrealistic of times. I cannot imagine how this works. And yet I see this very concrete result that has so positively impacted one family and the ripple effect of that and the culmination of so much hard work and campaigning for years to release Miss Alice. I am blown away and I am very grateful. And I still just think it's the strangest thing in the world that Kim Kardashian is now our national prison reform spokesperson with Trump. It's just a bizarre world to me. We have Edie back on the line, who has some information about local resources. Edie, are you there?
Yes, thank you so much. So you said we need to invest in our communities, and one way we can do that is get as many people as you can to sign the petition to put on the ballot the Portland Clean Energy Community Benefits Initiative. The first people to get the free weatherization and rooftop solar are Black early disabled homeowners, Black people of color, formerly incarcerated tenants, and then the first people to get the job training and the jobs are people of color, people who are chronically unemployed, for example, those who have been formerly incarcerated, and the first businesses to get the contracts for the free weatherization and rooftop solar are minority-owned businesses. This would not increase taxes for any of us. It is a 1% surcharge on the business license of those corporations that make over $1 billion in retail sales nationally, plus $500 million in retail sales in the city of Portland. So that'd be like Walmart that doesn't pay taxes. So this is a way in which we can immediately invest back into jobs and housing and prevent houselessness and that cycle of using drugs or other things to deal with the pain and to try to make ends meet.
Yeah, this is
Portland
a pretty
Clean Energy Community Benefits Initiative.
This is a really well thought out act, and I appreciate you calling in with that information again. Thanks very much, Edie. All right. With just a little time left, I wanted to maybe hear from you, Topeka, a little bit about how things are going with Hope House now. That you said that there was that outcry of the not in my backyard, even in a community that should well understand the impacts and devastation of the mass incarceration that is happening. How are things happening? How are things working with Hope House now?
Well, it's been great. We're full. We're looking to expand and open another location. You know, the community has been fairly quiet. We, you know, went to a community board meeting. We had many supporters, both near and far, that came to stand with Hope House. And, you know, just letting you know that we're good neighbors. So, you know, we're there. and we're excited, and the women are thriving, and things are good. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with the next location, and just thinking about different ways that when we enter different communities, you know, who, what local organizations can we partner with within those communities, especially when we go around the country, in that way that we are then welcomed and invited, and just thinking about different strategic ways so people don't feel like we're just infiltrating what they believe is their neighborhood. So,
And looking at linking campaigns across the country, again, the national reform campaigns that you're involved with, you are personally involved in the Dignity for Incarcerated Women, and that's also, if, as I understand it, it's a part of the larger Cut 50 campaign. How do people plug in to help on a national level, on a policy reform level? What sort of things should they be looking at?
I mean, they can go to, if they're interested in doing any of the dignity work, dignityact.org is the website, dignityact.org. If they're looking, you know, in Florida, they're doing some amazing work. Desmond Mee down there with the voters, putting, you know, getting the voting rights given back to formerly incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people down in Florida, New Orleans, Vote with North Henderson is doing different work. I know, again, with me, when I came home, I Googled, you know, in organizations that help incarcerated or formerly incarcerated women, and a list of things came up. I think if people go to their local universities, looking in, you know, women's studies, the criminal justice departments, law schools, schools of public health, you know, there's different ways to get involved that way. Again, ministries, you know, churches, you know, there's a way to get in that way. The prison, go to the prison yourself, find out what's going on, how you can volunteer. Legislation, figure out what you think is missing and get it done. And again, you know, I'm talking very broadly because the way I feel is like, you know, because it, again, we know what all the numbers are. We know that incarceration impacts all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It does. That talk to a person who's been impacted. Ask them what they need. Mm-hmm. What would make their life better? How do they foresee bringing their family member home? What resources do they need to help their family member while they're in? And try to create community in that way as well.
In that it's such a huge topic, and it's been so devastating. What gives you hope to continue your work?
The women that I left behind. That's it. And I also know that it's my purpose. I know, and I know that I have been very blessed and fortunate. I know when I came home, I had women who embraced me, women like Andrea James, embraced me. And so I know that I have to be able to do the same thing for the other sisters who are coming behind me. I have to embrace them. You know, there are organizations like We Got Us Now that focus on children and young adults who have been impacted by parental incarceration.
What was the name of that organization?
WeGotUsNow.org. And that's Ebony Amiko Underwood's organization, whose father, William Underwood, is serving life in federal prison without the possibility of parole and has done 30 years.
Mm.
And so, you know, fighting there. Again, I said Can Do Clemency. You know, Miss Alice was highlighted as number one on Can Do Clemency. And, you know, through her and pushing her, we were able to set her free. But Amy has 25 men and 25 women on her list. And that's not nearly enough, but that's a start, right?
Right.
You know, a way that you can start helping there and seeing how you can push your resources towards pushing a person out. Going on change.org and just signing petitions, right? You know, those petitions, people look at to see how many people are in support of this person's story. But does the person have support coming home if they get an opportunity to come home? And then just getting more involved, even locally, in what's happening in your local police department, your community district, right? You know, stop calling the cops when something happens or seems like something is happening. You know, go knock on a door and check on your neighbor. Find out who's living in your community. Mm-hmm. You know, let's try to do like I know my grandmother did years ago. You know, take care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and stop looking for outsiders to take care of you.
That first, I mean, that seems like such a really basic first step for people that are concerned about the criminal justice system or the criminally unjust system, as the case may be. And yet it is so important to think about maybe involving our lives less with the police and with the criminal justice system to, in fact, get into true community health and looking at not relying on police to come in and fix things as they, I'll leave it there. I don't often hear people say that, and I just really want to thank you for making that really obvious connection. I think it's important. You know, let's not call the police when we, you know, I think that's a super important thing. I am looking at this moment. We have just a moment left. We have Kristen on hold. Let's go ahead and grab what she has to say real fast. We have just a couple minutes. Kristen, you're on the air.
Howdy. Good morning. Thank you so much for this conversation. I just wanted to give a quick shout out, call out to my other white women for our responsibility in these kinds of issues. I've been going through a really awful situation watching a male loved one who's an ethnic minority be targeted by the system in order to so-called protect another white woman. And I know that the system does not give those that luxury to women of color and women who are poor. And so what you've described on the show earlier of the cascade of impact from having incarcerated black or men of color and loved ones and then eventually ending up in prison like your guest did, I just wanted to call out the entire system protecting, supposedly, we know it doesn't really, but being set up to protect white women, and that gives us a particular responsibility to work to dismantle it. So,
Kristen, thanks very much for your call this morning.
Yeah.
Thanks. And we do just have a couple of moments left. Any last words, Topeka?
I just encourage, you know, I thank you first for the opportunity to spend time with you this morning to talk about the work and, you know, the work of many. And I just want people to understand, again, that it's just every individual's obligation and responsibility to make sure that they're doing their part, right? You know, just as human beings, it's our responsibility to take care of each other. You know, the Bible doesn't say you have to like each other. The Bible says that you have to love each other. And so, you know, in loving, you take care.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is. And so, you know, we have to start recognizing people for people. We have to understand that none of us are perfect and that everyone has made a mistake in their life. And it's unfortunate that, you know, people of color are criminalized for that. You know, we also know that their communities don't have resources, don't have opportunity, don't have access. And yes, it disproportionately affects people of color. You know, but I've visited rural communities in this country where there's this poor white communities, right? Mm-hmm. And that I'm looked at as a foreigner because they don't even see black people.
Right.
Right? Like, you know, they only see what they see in their local news. And they only see what's going on in their local neighborhood. And so, you know, we cannot, we have to understand that if people are uneducated, they do what they know.
Mm-hmm.
And with social media, unfortunately, you know, the way these data and analytics and all these other things that I'm learning about,
right?
How they follow what you. To me, you know, I have a whole other theory about it. But sometimes I'm talking aloud, and next thing I know, something's popped up on my feed somewhere, and I'm like, wait a minute, is this phone hearing me? You know,
uh-huh.
I'm not paranoid, but it's just it's really real. It's just,
but it is really real. It's true.
And so, you know, if you're surrounding yourself in certain things, you know, what we put in is what we give out. And if all I see and all I read are things that suggest, you know, hate or you know, something that's disproportionate or even as it relates to race, you know, or, you know, just your color, you know, that I'm better than someone because of this, then that's the way a person is going to show up in the world. And opposed to fighting it with the same nonsense, you know, we have to fight it with love. And we have to educate, and we have to embrace. And that's just what it is. So,
thank you so much, Topeka Sam, for joining us this morning on Positively Revolting. That is a wonderful note to end it on. Get involved and stay involved. And thank you so much for your work in this field.
Thank you.
Take
have
care.
A great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, listeners, for sticking with us. And be positively revolting this week. As always, we will be back with you in 1 week.
Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present the live broadcast for the 26th annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music, Arts, and Food Festival. This 3-day celebration kicks off Friday, June 22nd, with the Good in the Hood Parade and Festival continuing Saturday, June 23rd, and ending Sunday evening, June 24th. Good in the Hood is back at King School Park at Northeast Grand Avenue. Tune into KBOO starting Saturday afternoon on June 23rd for the live broadcast. More information about Good in the Hood can be found on the KBOO.fm website on the home page.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9:01 a.m. Coming up on the beloved community, Professor Paul Ortiz talks about his book, African-American and Latinx History of the United States. At 10, Valley Views is back with more tips on eating to live.